Well, we're talking about kindness. We're making our way through the fruits of the Spirit. And we introduced kindness last week. And today we're going to take the time to look at some of those examples of the people who we think really have shown kindness. I think it's one of those virtues, one of those fruits of the Spirit that we probably are pretty good at recognizing. But we always learn so much more from an example than we do just from looking at some verses that say, be kind. Right. Well, I've been trying to trim down time a little bit. I know Michaela had been needing to sneak out to get to work, and we've been blessed just to have her here for the time that she is. With this quick she's been going. So I was trying to make sure we're done in Michaela time. She's not here today, so I can go as long as I want. I believe is what the way it works. No, like Mike says, we got Mother's Day plans to get out to, and we're blessed to have many new faces here today. So let's take a little bit of time and look at a few things that we can learn from looking through our Bibles at some examples of kindness. To kind of reset from last week, talked about two types of kindness that we see in the Bible. Kindness from above, kindness that kind of derives from power, where one who has power, whether a king or a boss or a teacher or God, decides who is worthy or unworthy of receiving kindness. We talk about that as kind of kindness that is bestowed upon because of the power that one has. We gave some examples, including Joshua and Rahab. And we said that's kind of the kindness that we see in the covenant. God makes the covenant with people. It is obviously not an even relationship because of the greatness of God, but it is certainly a relationship that is full of kindness. So we're talking about the one kind. The other kind, we said, is perhaps a little more special. The kindness, we called it from eye to eye, of those on the same level, either at the same amount of power, or we said very often it's just people that don't have power at all, but they do have the ability to help. This is when friends help each other, when family, or even when you see a stranger in need and you help. So rather than bestowing, we usually talk about this in terms of service. And we said what makes this special and perhaps unique is what we see in the incarnation when Jesus comes to earth to live among us, and we see kindness eye to eye in that way. We said it kind of interesting that until that point, God really couldn't show this type of kindness. And so we said we're mostly going to be looking at the eye to eye type of kindness, mostly looking at the ways that we can serve others around us, not out of a position of power, but out of a position where we look to serve and to help. All right, everybody feel reset? Good. Moving on to today's stuff. A few ways we can see how kindness works in examples from the Bible. First, I would say kindness can be planned or it can be spontaneous. Sometimes we like to put everything in a bucket and say, this is what it looks like. But you can plan to be kind. You can say, I intend to go do something. The ladies here say, we're going to get together on the first Saturday of every month and we're going to do some kind of service project. We're going to try to find a way that we can show some kindness to our community. And that has been making blankets or making dresses or I know they've got some other plans in the works, but they said, we plan to do something service-minded to show this kindness to our community. And that's a good thing. Kindness does not have to be planned. Kindness can be spontaneous. We Good Samaritan last week, you can't plan for that sort of thing. You can't plan to see somebody in need, somebody that needs that help, and say, I'm going to go look for that. But sometimes, there it is. We need to allow ourselves to be able to spontaneous kindness. We need to be able to first, and kind of go back to some things we talked about with patients, we need to have allowed ourselves enough to be able to show that kindness, and we need to show that willingness. A narrative from the Bible that made me think of this point is one that we've talked about before. I believe this was an example back when we were on the fruit of the Spirit of love. I thought about Ruth and Boaz. And the reason I was thinking about this story when it comes to kindness, not only is it one of the books that the word shows up the most in the Bible, but we see several types of kindness. One thing I think is interesting is the expectation versus what actually happens. At the beginning of the book, we have Naomi, for lack of a better word, scheming with Ruth to figure out how they're going to be taken care of. They plan to seek this sort of kindness from above, right? Go to the fields. Go glean. Find someone who is willing to show you kindness. You know, that is that kindness that comes from power. And yet, as the story plays out, we see more clear examples of this eye-to-eye kindness than we do that from power. The first reference to kindness is before Boaz is on the scene. Naomi is speaking to her two daughters-in-law, Ruth being one of them, and she tells them, go home, and may the Lord show you kindness as you have shown kindness to your dead husbands and to me. May the Lord grant each of you that you will find rest in the home of another husband. So this is where they are trying to find that bestowed kindness. I hope you get it from God. They say, well, we're not. Ruth says, I'm not going. I said, okay, well, we're going to try to find this bestowed kindness from someone else. And after Ruth returns from the fields and tells about what Boaz did, not just allowing her to glean, but giving her extra and taking care of her and showing her that kind of kindness, Naomi says, the Lord bless him. He's not stopped showing kindness to the living. And then she gets back into the scheming. So we're going to, that sounds bad, but if you read it, that's what she's doing. She's trying to find a way to take care of Ruth and herself. And while Naomi might still be talking about the bestowed kindness, Ruth seems to make this comment that he seems to be doing something a little more. He even said to me, stay with my workers until they finished harvesting all my grain. We see this kindness shown to Ruth that is of a very spontaneous variety. You know, Boaz did not know he was going to be meeting Ruth that day. He did not know what could come of this scene, but he saw someone who was family, although foreign, saw someone who was in need, and yet that she was helping Naomi, and in that moment said, this is the time where I need to show extra kindness. And out of that action, we see Ruth showing a planned sort of kindness. She goes back in. She goes to the threshing floor and does something with sandals. And you can read different commentaries and authors to decide what exactly happened in that scene. We're not going into all that. But it was very clearly interpreted as kindness by Boaz. The Lord bless you, my daughter. This kindness is greater than that which you've shown earlier. You have not run after younger men, whether rich or poor, and now do not be afraid. I will do for you all that you ask. All the people of my town know that you are a woman of noble character. And so in this narrative of Ruth, we have all these kinds of kindness going on. We have bestowed kindness, and we have shared kindness, service kindness. We have something being planned, and we have something being spontaneous. And perhaps all the different ways that it's working maybe says, stop making all these categories and just learn something. But preachers make categories, right? But we see, as we've talked about Ruth before, this is a book where we see the covenant and the law that comes from the covenant with flesh on it, as I like to say. We see when God's people are acting like God's people, they do things like the way Ruth and Boaz do things. And it's amazing that when God's people are acting like God's people, the word kindness seems to show up quite a bit. So that's the first one we're looking at. We're moving right along. So not only do we say kindness can be planned, it can be spontaneous. Kindness doesn't have to be something big. I think we all have experienced that. I think we know that while we might think of the grand gesture, something very large, it's the small things that can feel very, very big. If you look at the last chapter of the book of Acts, this is Paul's been in another shipwreck, and there's a long scene in chapter 27 of trying to survive to make it to land, and they finally crash on the island of Malta, and he describes the response in chapter 28. Once safely on shore, we found out the island was called Malta. The islanders showed us unusual kindness. They built a fire and welcomed us all because it was raining and cold. Now, there's more that happens in this narrative later that makes things strange in some ways with these islanders. They, through various events, they decide that Paul must be a murderer and then he must be a god, and eventually they kind of level things out and end up working together. But notice this description of unusual kindness. This verse popped up on my search. Where's the word kindness in the Bible? And I said, okay, well, this showed them unusual kindness. This must be something very great, because Paul's been a lot of places and been shown a lot of kindness. And what did they do that this is this incredible, unusual kindness? They built a fire and said, come over here. It's not a grand gesture. We see bigger things happening in the book of Acts. We see bigger things in the gospel. But when you've just had tragedy at sea, and you're wet, and you're cold, and you are sapped of your strength from trying to get your boat to ground, starting a fire and saying, come on over, feels like a pretty big deal. It doesn't take a lot when there is a need there. And so when you can identify a need, a small gesture becomes huge. With the social club that I was a part of at Rochester, and I still help out with them sometimes, one of the things that they do for their pledge week, and you can tattle on me that I told stuff on pledge week. I think it's silly when they don't tell that stuff. One of the things we do is we say, we're going to work on service tonight. We take them in the middle of town, drop them off, and I said, we'll see you in a couple hours. Go serve this town. And it's something that I went through when I was in the pledge class. And we tried doing some different things. We went to retirement home and sang some songs to the people there, and they thought that was incredible. And we stopped in at Subway and said, can we help you out? And they said, well, we're just closing up. And I said, what's your closing routine? And so we were mopping floors and we were wiping down tables, and they got to leave a little earlier. And those were nice, but what really stands out to me from that night was we went into a pizza place, Tower Pizza. It's not even there anymore in Rochester, but you might know the place. And he said, I really don't know if I have anything for you. You guys, sounds like you're doing some good stuff, but I don't really have anything. And one of our guys who had worked in a pizza place before said, do you need boxes folded? Apparently, that's a big part of the pizza business. I was going to ask Barb. She must be doing something else today. I figured her time doing pizza, she probably could back me up on this. But apparently, you spend a lot of time folding boxes so you can get the pizza out. And he said, yeah, I could use some boxes folded. And so the eight of us spent probably not a lot of time. Everybody take a stack of boxes and make them up. I wish I could have the know-how to get the piece of this video up there because we recorded it. I'm not going to forget the picture of this guy. A picture of the window going into the kitchen. His kitchen is just full of stacks of boxes, and he's just beaming. It's not a big deal to take a piece of cardboard and fold it into a box, especially when you have eight college students. And it wasn't that hard, but it made a big difference to that guy that night. And we got discounts at Tower Pizza for the rest of the time that we were in school. Little thing for him, big thing for us. So it goes both ways there, I suppose. When the need is there, it doesn't take a lot. Whether it's, I see that you almost died, let me start a fire so you can dry off and take care of you. Or, would this help? Let me see what I can do when you have the time or the ability. Kindness doesn't have to be huge to be appreciated. And finally, I want to look at an odd narrative about King David. It's interesting that David shows up in a few different stories of what seems like eye-to-eye kindness, somebody trying to do kindness not from the place of power, because he had an awful lot of power. We've talked about what he did with Mephibosheth in gratitude for what Jonathan did. But in 2 Samuel chapter 10, there's this unexplained reference here where it says, the king of the Ammonites died. His son succeeded him as king. And David thought, I will show kindness to Hunan, son of Nahash, just as his father showed kindness to me. We don't know what that kindness was. The only previous reference in the Bible to Nahash, king of the when he's trying to take over an area of the Israelites, and they asked for a treaty, and he said, I'll make a treaty if I can also gouge out the left eye of all of your men here so that you can be, everybody can see your shame. And then instead of having that happen, Saul, who had just been made king, came in and led the fight and secured his place as king and won the battle. I don't think that's the kindness that David was talking about. I could be wrong, but I don't think the eye gouging thing was kindness in David's eyes. But something happened, and there's some theories out there, there's some traditions, I don't know. Something Nahash did, David took as an act of kindness and wanted to do the same to his son because of the kindness that Nahash showed. So David sent a delegation to express his sympathy to Hanun concerning his father. The new Ammonite king was suspicious. He said, you're not here for something kind. You're here to as spies, and you're trying to take over my land. And so the response was, Hanun seized David's envoys, shaved off half of each man's beard, cut off their garments at the buttocks, and sent them away. Which is a silly verse. And is an odd reaction to what David was trying to do. And it goes to show that, you know, sometimes we say no good deed goes unpunished. Maybe that's not exactly what's going on here. But We can say, you can't control how kindness is received. We are told to be kind and to show kindness. We can't make somebody receive it. And we should not use that as an excuse to not do kindness the next time. Maybe be careful around the Ammonites. But we are called to be kind regardless of how that kindness is received. We know that sometimes we end up having to turn the other cheek. That was not intended as a garments cut off at the buttocks joke, I promise. But sometimes we know that we have to be willing to be hurt even when we're trying to be kind, and that God still wants us to be kind. David seemed to understand that. David's a good example of this sort of kindness. I think we can see a lot of these good examples of God's people trying to act like God's people to God's people, because they recognize that everyone belongs to God. And I think these are all good examples of these types of kindness. And I got these all put together this week, and I said, yeah, these examples work, but I'm going to be honest. While all of these examples, I feel, work for these lessons, I realized after this got all put together, I did not learn any of these lessons from any of these stories. They're there, but it would be insincere to say that I learned these lessons from these stories. You know where I learned these lessons? I learned them from my mom. And I suspect we all know a little more about kindness because of our mothers. My mom taught me, you look for opportunities to be kind. Sometimes you plan it. Sometimes you just seize the opportunity. My mom taught me about a little bit of kindness can make a big deal if your eyes are open to somebody's needs. And my mom taught me that there are some times people aren't going to receive kindness the way you intend. There are going to be people that aren't going to treat you right, and maybe you don't play with them anymore. But you don't forget the reason that you did that kindness. In this series on the fruits of the Spirit, when we are taking the time to look at these profiles or portraits in each of these virtues, we see a lot of good lessons from people in the Bible. But God hasn't just given us the people in the pages of the Bible to teach us about the fruits of the Spirit. God's given us a lot of people around us today, or people like mothers who may not be with you today, but who have taught you something about the fruits of the Spirit. And we are blessed for that. And so on this Mother's Day, whether you're spending the day with your mom, or you're giving her a call, or if all you have is the memories and the person that you are because of what your mom has done, I pray that we can take those lessons, whether it's kindness, or love, joy, peace, or whatever you've taken from your time with your mother. This week, do something to pass that on. And that's perhaps one of the best ways that we can honor our mothers, by showing that we learned something and showing that it has changed us, and trying to pass that on. Let's be a blessing to those that we've learned from and those that we're trying to teach. If there's anything you need this morning, if there's anything you need to share, if you need to give your mother the greatest gift that you ever can by accepting Christ in baptism. If there's anything you need, we want to hear about it. Come forward and let us know as we stand and sing.
God is calling the prodigal, come without delay. Hear, oh, hear him calling.